All right, we're up and running. Tessel Micha, the page I gave you, those of you who don't have it, I've got a few spares over here, so if you need the sheet, you can move and pass them around, put your hand up. If you haven't got the sheet that I gave out 2 weeks ago, they're being passed around at the moment. The basic question, which is very hard to answer, on the whole story of the image, remember the basic story that the tribe of Dan adopt this particular image in their northern Shetach, the part of the Israel where they settle. And the whole question of where this image comes from, or what is it all about? What is this Pesel really about? Pesel means an image, means like an idol. And on the page that I gave you, you'll see that there is a whole discussion, which I'm not going to go into in great detail, that there is a Midrashic opinion that this image was with the Jewish people, not just being made now, but came from Egypt. That means that they took it with them right through the desert. They had it with them at Mount Sinai. They had it with them across the Red Sea. There's a whole discussion over here in this page that I gave you. And of course, that really makes the question much more difficult. That if this is an Avodah Zarah, an idol, what is it doing at Mount Sinai? Why wasn't it destroyed? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu, when they made the Egel, we know that the Egel was destroyed. Moshe made a command. They ground it up into dust, remember? They got rid of it. Alright, so therefore the question is, why was this particular Pesel never destroyed? That's the question that basically I just want to deal with very briefly. And the only thing I can share with you, if you just have that page in front of you, look on the other side, the back of the page. Side B, if you see what I mean. And I just want to look at the middle of the page over here. Where it's a little paragraph just over halfway down, and it's taken from the writings of Rabbi Dessler. Remember we mentioned it before. One of the great rabbis who became one of the sort of intellectual giants, I suppose you would say, of the Jewish world. Before the war, he lived in England. After the war, he became one of the heads of the yeshiva in Ponovich, in Bnei Brak in Israel. Very, very great man. And he's very perplexed about this whole story. And I just want to read that little paragraph with you, where it says, Vihine, which is about two-thirds of the way down on the other side of the page. He says like this, Hine, Avodah Zarah de Pesel Micha lo hayta Avodah Zarah pshuta. So it's clear we're not talking about a simple idol. This is not like the golden calf. Shaharei in Kol Yisrael Avra Avodah Zarah Zu, or Avda, I suppose it should be, Avodah Zarah Zu Derech Yatsu. Oh no, excuse me, Avra is right. If the Jews had taken this across the Red Sea, Shenekra Banes, which was split by a miracle, the Om Du'imah Livnei Har Sinai, and they took it to Har Sinai, Shezachu Sham Negilu Shechina Panim B'Panim, and saw God face to face. How is it possible if it was an idol? They would have been commanded to destroy it. But Od Haitayv Sharuot K'divei Chazal, She Anan Amaracha Mishilo Yitarev Anan Karbanot Pesamicha. They used to do Karbanot to this Pesel in the north, and smoke used to rise up, and Chazal say that the smoke from the north used to blow sort of towards the middle of the country, and the smoke from the Mishkan used to rise up from the Korbanot which were made to God, and the two pillars of smoke used to intertwine. Now again, that suggests that this worship was not absolutely forbidden. He says, underline the last line there, the ain't sufficient of Arim Begad. There's no question there's something going on here, which is very difficult to explain. And he says, and this is what Rabbi Levi says, the last section where he says, not a plane of Avodah Zarah. Emor me'ata, so you can say, lo haya b'pesel micha b'shem Avodah Zarah musa pshuta. This was not a simple, despicable idol. Ela mishum ta'ut, the darkei avodah. What he's saying is that the Jews made a mistake. Their mistake was that they thought that not only could you worship God, Hashem, invisible God, But if you needed a physical representation in order to focus your mind towards God, that seems to have been the mistake the killers allowed. When the Torah forbids idolatry, that's when you're worshipping the idol as an end, not just as a means to an end, but an end in itself. When it comes to this Pesach, in the beginning, and this is why they took it from Egypt and they kept it, it was seen by the people who had it as a way of focusing towards Hashem. Now the danger is, think back to the story of Gideon with the ephod, which obviously he did in all good faith. What happened to the ephod after he died? What did it become? An idol. It became not just a focus to Hashem, but a focus unto itself. And that was the problem here. That the people, when they were in an atmosphere in the desert, they were crossing the Red Sea, they were close to Hashem, there was no thought in their mind that this Pesel, this image, would be anything but a way of focusing to Hashem. We walk into shul today, so we expect to see an oran, we expect to see any sort of decoration, a curtain. All of these things, the shul is built to help us focus towards God. When the a high priest went into the Kodesh Kodeshim, he saw the kruvim, the cherubs, right, the famous thing, also above the ark, and they were also a kind of way of focusing towards Hashem. They weren't idolatrous. The danger is that if we play around with this stuff, it's like dynamite. We can set it and use it to destroy something in order to rebuild. You know, when they take down an old building, they have to use dynamite. That's a good use, but of course, if you don't know what you're doing, you light the dynamite at the wrong time, boom, you blow yourself up. And that is, I think, what's going on here. They are in a circumstance where they've moved away from Hashem sufficiently to start seeing the Pesach not as a means to an end, but as an end in itself. Does that make sense? Does that sort of ring a bell with what we're talking about? Because I think it's an important point. When we're in this generation, they honestly believe they could focus towards God using images. Eventually, of course, Judaism broke away from that completely, right? By the Second Temple, that was all gone. And that's really why Judaism, for instance, and Christianity are not parallel religions, but going at 180 degrees in each other. Because the first thing you see when you come into a church, you ever walked into a church, is an image. The image of Jesus, or the image of the cross, or the image of Mary, or whatever it is. They're so full of images because they believe focus on the image helps you to focus towards God. We turned around and said many, many years ago, we're not doing that anymore. Because we tried it, that was maybe what happened with the eagle at the beginning, the golden calf, and certainly over here with the Pesach. And it stayed around till the destruction of the temple. It's unbelievable. This Pesach was never destroyed. Because when they went to destroy it, I suppose the people around it said, why are you destroying it? It's not really an idol. It's just a kind of, you know, aid memoir. It's helping us to remember Hashem. But of course, you know, if they were honest with their hand on their heart, they would have said, really, what we're doing is not worshipping God anymore. We think the idol has magic powers. And they started worshipping the idol. It's very odd. It's the oddest story probably in the Bible, where you've got something like this, which was taken from Egypt, carried all the way through the desert, seems to have had a raison d'etre, a positive reason for existence. And when it got to the point where they needed to do something about it, they always kind of made an excuse. But it was potentially like dynamite. And in the end, of course, the reason why it's mentioned here is because it's a sign of the generation. This is a generation which says we know better, almost to say we know better than God. They would turn around, Isha Yashar Beinav Yaseh. Remember that phrase. That's a good phrase to remember for the exam. Isha Yashar Beinav Yaseh. Man wants to do what he considers to be right. And that's the fault of this generation. Many generations, 360 years, they all believed that whatever they did was correct. And of course it was a problem, serious problem, because they started making their own rules. They started making their own kind of, I wouldn't call it a different form of Judaism. They started making detours within the framework of what we would recognize as the Jewish faith, the Jewish belief. And this, I think, is important because that's a kind of segue into this horrendous story right at the end of the Sefer of Pelegesh Megivah. Any comments about what we just said? I hope that kind of makes sense. It's very hard. You can see Rabbi Tess is struggling with it. He's struggling because he doesn't understand why it was never destroyed. If it's an idol, get rid of it. You know, it's a Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah is forbidden. The answer is it wasn't really. It was like a wet focusing. You know, we talk about idols today. And we talk about, like, you know, sort of in a more generic sense. We use the word idol when we describe someone who is a famous star, a pop idol. Okay, we don't talk about getting rid of such a person. Maybe someone should be got rid of, but that's for different reasons. The reality is that, you know, it's not something that is, it's difficult to explain. It's not something which is totally, you know, black and white here. We're talking about a very grey zone, a really grey zone. I just want to read the last paragraph and then we're going to move on. Yeah. He's trying to understand what exactly it was, because they didn't destroy it. It says clearly they kept it till the destruction of the temple, much later after David.
They're just to, like, prove a point to the people that they didn't,
like, down. Yeah, I mean that was the point. But of course, the danger is, as long as it's around, it's always a temptation, and that's why the question is, why didn't they get rid of it? So we can always argue that, you know what, it was something which kind of had a kind of mystique to it. It wasn't absolutely black or white, it was like grey, and it was allowed to continue, even though of course the we can see that when around it, directly connected to it, it seems to be pretty idolatrous. It's very strange. It's a strange story, but what does it highlight? It highlights the fact that people stopped following the rules of the Torah and started making up their own rules. And that's what we're saying by the end of this book. Ish Eyashad, again, it gets repeated over and over again. People are making up their own rules. Forget about the rules of what it said in the Bible, what it said in the Torah, Torah Shemitah, Torah Shemapeh. We are now going to make it up as we go along. And this is a classic example that they made it up. And they could justify it, they could almost justify it to the point where, you know, they didn't think it was anything wrong. And this is kind of interesting. It's a, you know, there's a lot of Judaisms today, a lot of variations, which sort of, you know, have that kind of element within it. We decide if we think it's right, we'll change it. Now, Orthodox Judaism cannot do that so easily. We can evolve if the situation demands. We can re-examine the issue. But can we change it? Can we say that now, because men and women should be so much more integrated, therefore we sit together and shul? The answer is no. That's a kind of, that's a bottom line which we've established. Can we compromise on kosher food? No. Can we compromise on Shabbat observance? No. What we can do is that we can deal with the issues of electricity, which weren't around 100 years ago. So we re-examine a lot of these issues, but we have to have a framework. That's the difference, essentially, between Orthodox Judaism and all the other branches of Judaism, non-Orthodox. And this is what we're talking about here as well. It's kind of, it's within the orthodoxy of those days, they found a kind of, I won't call it a loophole, but it's a grey zone. And this grey zone was very, very tempting. It was something that they really, you know, they got into, certainly one of the tribes. It's a struggle to try and explain it, but I think if you understand that it typifies the generation, and they made their own rules, then I think it makes sense. They were making up the rules about this thing on their own. Alright, so that's all I wanted to say about it, but, you know, if you've got any greater suggestions than that, please let me know, because it's not an easy thing to explain. One or two of you did try and write about it, so I think, you know, you'd appreciate how difficult this thing is. Alright, that's just a little bit about Pelegesh, about Pesach Mincha. Chapter 19, this awful story of the Pelegesh Megivah. Chapter 19, 20, and 21. The last three chapters go through an event which begs us to ask a very, very serious question. In my email, I asked you to read it through. I hope some of you have done that already. We'll go over some of the salient points in this particular story in a minute. But there is immediately, for those who did read it, there is another story that immediately springs to mind. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Having read the Pelegish Megivah, what are you reminded of straight away? All right, maybe we'll talk about the events and then somebody will wake up to this. Yeah.
I remember it was Sodom and...
Sodom? The whole story of Lot, right? It's such a kind of ringer, it's such an obvious comparison that we ask ourselves the very simple question, have we fallen to the level of Sodom? Sodom was destroyed. How can the Jewish people, and if you say like Rashi, that one of the opinions that it was right at the beginning of the period of Judges, which is very difficult to say, you know, I can contemplate this at the end of the 300 years. But at the beginning of the 300 years, wow, that is incredibly difficult. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that approach in this particular story. It must have taken this sort of decay, moral decay, takes a long time. But let's talk about the story and then we'll talk a bit about Sodom, because it does blow the mind. What I'm going to ask, because my voice is not so great, if somebody will read just Sukkim, and I'll just sort of chip in with the translation as we go along. There's a volunteer to read. I know you can do this very easy. Yeah. You don't have a book. Book is pretty good. Right. Okay, loud and clear. Vayi.
Vayi bayimim ahem, melech en b'Yisrael.
Melech en b'Yisrael. No king. Vayi.
Vayi ish levi gar b'chati ham Ephraim, vayikach lo isha pilegesh mibet b'chem yudah.
Right, and he had a wife. It wasn't pilegesh means they got married. But it wasn't a chuppah. They didn't have a whole party. Didn't go to a hall and all the rest of it. It was an arrangement which was usually only for the king. But it seems to have been done in this case by this Levi. He had a Pelegesh. He had a wife who was known as the Pelegesh, his concubine. That's what the English translation. What did she do? But his Ne'ala, she went astray. She probably had an affair. Whatever. Go on. She ran away to Beit Lechem, right? But Yisha. Right. 4 months she was away from her husband, and he misses her. Okay, even though she didn't behave herself, he wants her back. So what did he do? The husband. Yeah, to come back. Come home, dear. Come home, darling. I want you home. The Naroi, my young lad, right? Right, and the father of the girl, in other words, the father-in-law of this man, saw him, and he was very happy to see it. He realized that she married very well, married Ish Levi. The Leviim were always very prominent people, so the father-in-law was very happy. The girl had been living there for 4 months, probably had enough time to go back to her husband. Look what happens there. Strange story. Yeah, had a good time. They partied for 3 days. Right? Don't ask me why, but I suppose, you know, come in, let's open a bottle and drink. Okay, by here. Stay another day, fourth day. They want to go home already, right? The man with the Pelegesh, and the father-in-law says, stay around another day. Like, you know, I know what's going on now. I'll tell you in a second, yeah.
Can I ask a question on the commentaries? It says that the girl's father rejoiced because since the Levi came, it like proved that it was his fault for the separation.
Yeah.
Something. But that wasn't the case, right? It was her fault?
It seems to be her fault. He thought it was his fault. That's a more intimate interpretation. I'm going to suggest something else. We are dealing here with a case of extreme, no other way I can describe it. Not extreme makeover. This is extreme lack of chesed, lack of kindness. And it immediately is set up as a kind of contrast. Here is the father of this girl, who is making party after party with these, with his son-in-law, with his daughter who's run away, and they've all caught up with each other. And it all looks as if then, you know, everything is nice and kind and, you know, there's a lot of food. Chesed, chesed, chesed. And then you'll see what happens as soon as they get into the public arena, quite the opposite. It's making a statement, I really believe this, is that here it shows you that the generation was very into itself. Everyone was kind to themselves, everyone was kind to their immediate. But they did not care one iota about anyone who was outside their particular mini circle, be it the family circle, be it the tribal circle. That was it. But if you were from Binyamin and somebody came to you and asked for kindness, and they were from Yehuda, you were starting to get lost. And that is the crux of this story. Right? Chesed is an issue which we've spoken about from the beginning of the Sefer. They didn't mourn for Yehoshua the way they should have done. We saw it in the middle of the Sefer with Gidon, that they didn't do to Gidon Chesed the way they should have done. And at the end of the Sefer, this is extreme, bad Chesed situation. Alright, so I think that's really where we're going. It's the way I understand it. So you'll see here that this gets out of control. They're partying for the fourth day. They start partying for the fifth day. Come on guys, enough already. The answer is, yeah, this is Chesed, but it's not real Chesed. This is not doing kindness for the sake of helping society. It's kindness for your own, literally for your own stomach. You're helping yourself, you're having another portion. And another portion, is that Chesed? Self-indulgence, yeah. Chesed, not so sure. Alright, so that's my thing we're going, but your comment is interesting. Let's go on, let's see what happens. Yeshu, where are we? Vav, yes.
Yeah?
Right, stay another night. Another day. You say in Yiddish, nochatom. You know, stay another day. Go on. Vayakam. He wants to leave. The son-in-law wants to get out of there. Father-in-law says, stay. Another day. What's the rush? What's the rush? Again, it all looks very mishpachti. Yeah, it looks very sort of homely. But it really isn't. Look what happens. Yashkeim baboker. Right, but the fifth day they're ready to go. Hang around. Have a bit more to eat. Wait till the end of the day. You still got a bit more time. This is crazy. Look what happened. Tet. La'arov, in other words, it's getting dark. Already another day. Lilu now. Right, stay one more night. He doesn't want them to go home. Again, looks like he's doing real chesed to the family. But at this point, the husband of the woman of the Pelegesh says, enough, I've got to go. It's late, it's getting dark. This is where it gets dangerous. Look what happened. Ava means ratsa. Does not want. Lora lo ava ha'ich. Yevus, the direction of Yevus. Yevus was the name of Yerushalayim. But it wasn't Jewish yet. Yerushalayim was not conquered until the days of David. So Jerusalem was a non-Jewish place. The territory of Binyamin was there. Read on. Right, he's got a whole entourage going. Now, where did they go? Oh, it started getting really dark. Vayomer anar. Right, let's try and find somewhere to stay. Right, you know, nowadays, thank God, there's plenty of hotels in Jerusalem. In those days, not so straightforward. Alright, but they decided not to go to Jerusalem because it wasn't Jewish. There's a real irony here. They didn't go to the non-Jewish place, they ended up trying to go to the Jewish place. Thinking, of course, if they go to the Jewish place, how much better it's going to be. As you'll see, it's so much worse. Look what happened. Lachri, it's a foreign city. So we're going to give out another hill, which is further along, where there are Jews. Look what happened. Vayomer l'naro. Yeah, we'll stay overnight, either on that hill on somewhere on a high ground. Let's try and find somewhere to stay. So where did they go? Vayavru vayelchu. Binyamin, right? And it got dark, and they were in the territory of Binyamin. And here comes the shocker. Read on. Ve'asur sham. Nobody offered them a bed. Nothing. Right? Just 1 second. There's a beautiful place which is marked in the for all the tourists. You go to Shalayim. And it's the first building, the toll, now it's not the first building anymore, but it was of the first one you met when you came in on your camel into the new city of Jerusalem. The first building you got to, where, if you know where the shuk is, Machne Yehuda. Opposite the entrance, Machne Yehuda, there's a shul. And the shul is called Zarei Chama V'Achnasat Orchim. That's the name of the shul. And it serves two purposes. A big sundial on the wall of the shul, which nobody ever sees because you've got to look up. And the sundial obviously dictates what time tefillah, the morning, etc. And they also had in this building, the first building of the new city, in that direction, they had beds. The first thing that they had when you came into Jerusalem, you were riding from wherever you were coming from the desert, from another town, was to have a place where you could find a bed for the night. That was set up in about the year 1900, 1901, and that shul still exists. It's obviously now not the first building anymore, but it's a wonderful testament to Am Yisrael, the chesed, which maybe, you know, it's a kind of antidote to what we're learning here. Because this is where they went to a place very similar to what we're reading, the place that we would recognize, somewhere in Yerushalayim. Nobody opened their doors. It's a whole group of people, man, woman, a lad, a young man with donkeys, and he's got a whole pekalach and who knows what. Nobody wants to take them in. One old man is just coming back from work. Listen to this, Ted Zayn. Vihine. There, coming home in the evening. Mehar Ephraim. Right, so he's Ephraim, and the people living there are Benjamin. So there's Benjamin living in that place, and he's from a different tribe. He's living there, who knows, he's kind of, I don't know, it's not clear why he's there. He moved there. Look what happened, Yud Zayin. So he saw these people in the street, the travelers. What did he say to them? Yeah, where are you coming from? Who are you? Where are you going? What's up? So what did they say to him? Right, I'm on the way back to Beit Hashem. I want to go back to, I'm a Levi, I work in the Mishkan. I'm going back. So I'm looking for some hachnasat orchim, and every door in this place is closed. We're in trouble. We've got to literally sleep in the street. So look what this old man said. Yutet, and this is still, sorry, this is the traveler. Vagam Teven. We've even got our own food for the animals. We don't need anything. For gum. We're not missing anything. So this man, remember, he was a lanterman. He was connected because he was a Mithraim. And the other guy who's traveling is also a Mithraim. So there's a connection. There's a tribal connection. So he says to him, listen to this. Shalom lach. Right, welcome. Rak. Right, I'll provide you what you need. In other words, chesed yet again. But is this the real deal? We'll see in a minute. Rak barachov. Right, don't stay in the street, because already he knew what would happen. It was a lawless society. Lawless. Without chukim, without mishpatim. Excuse me. It was a place where if you stayed in the street, you were likely to be attacked and probably killed. And this is why he says, don't stay in the street, for goodness sake. I've got room, I've got a barn or whatever. Go and sleep in my place. Look what happened. Chafala. Here comes this shocking story. Right, everything's so far so good. Very nice, he gave him a meal. You know, and they're having probably a conversation. Here comes the shocker. And this is what Sarah mentioned before. Think about Sodom. Listen to this. Right? They're getting to know each other. They're good. Vihine. Lial means godless. Men, ruffians. I don't know what you want to call them. They're Jewish. That's one of the big differences. The men of Sodom, according to all opinions, are definitely not Jewish. Here we're talking about men of Binyamin who were Belial, which means they were godless people, but they were Jewish. Look what they say. Listen to this. Nasabu surrounded the house. Knock on the door. They want to break the door down. Look what they're saying. Vayomru. Neidaenu is a euphemism. They want to rape the guy. They want to have relations with him. It's disgraceful. It's disgusting what's going on here. This group of men say, bring out your guest and we want to molest him. And of course, the man who is trying to protect them, you got the impression already, he knows this can happen. And he's going to try and save the day. Look what he tries to do. Chaf Gimel. Yetzei Aleihem. Right, the old man came out. No, my brothers. Al Tareu. No, don't be so evil. Don't do this terrible thing. Don't do this nevela, this terrible deed. He begs them. And you can imagine that he's screaming or he's crying to them. Don't do this. Don't do this. It's terrible. Look what happens. And this again reminds you of Sodom. This is like Lot. When Lot was asked by the men, send the angels. Remember, the angels came to Sodom. So Lot is says to them, he comes out and he says, you can't have these guys. You want to molest them. I'll send out my daughters instead. Look what he says. Right, there's two women here. There's my daughter. He had a daughter who we haven't heard about till now. And the Pilegesh. And the concubine. Have those women instead. Otsia Na'otam. This, of course, again, is this chesed? To suggest not only give away his daughter, but the other man's wife? Thank you very much. You see what I'm saying? Even within the so-called good deeds of these particular people, there is real... underneath, you can already see holes in what they're doing. This is not an act of chesed to offer somebody else's wife to the mob. The mob want to be indecent with these people. So he comes along and says, well, you can have my daughter. And he's got a plegesh to take her as well. this is mind-boggling. Okay, this is something which is just so shocking. Look what happened. Right, tov b'neichem, of course, is tongue-in-cheek. What is good in your eyes, right? Do what is good in your eyes. Obviously, it's not very good at all. Like, Isha Zer. Right, don't do anything to this man. And you get the impression, why was he so protective of the man? Because where were they both from? The same tribe. So there is a kind of tribal affinity. Does he care about his daughter? Does he care about the Belegesh? Seemingly not. He only cares about the man because we're both from the same tribe. This again is chesed, which is not real chesed. Not real kindness. This is not, looking out for anyone to protect them. This is just saying, he's a friend of mine, don't do anything to him. You can do it, you can have your way with everybody else. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask, because I felt the man was a Levi, but they came from the same
place. Ephraim, they're very connected. So that's the whole thing. And this is why, again, this whole thing sounds so kind, but it really isn't. This is very warped. Chesed. It's chesed gone wrong. And again, this story screams volumes about the whole of Sefer Shoftim. Shoftim is about, on the one hand, Am Yisrael trying to settle in Eretz Yisrael. The bigger picture was to try and get leadership and to try and maintain standards, communally. The small picture, unfortunately, was not so great. In between the tribes, in between the different families and whatever, there's a lot of friction. And it gets to a point where chesed is completely what's the word, distorted. This is not real chesed, this is a distortion. And even this old man who seems to be doing a good deed is also behaving, you know, saying things which are very distorted. Let's just see a little bit more. It's a difficult story to learn, but it has such a powerful message. Read on. They were interested, the villains, right? What did they do? Right, so what did they do? They grabbed hold of this Pilegesh and they sent her out. In other words, she was the token sacrifice for the men. And of course, this poor girl was abused the whole night. Look what happened. They abused her. And they sent her home when the sun came up. And of course, by that time, she had been bashed around and so abused that she was on death's door. She had been so abused by these men. It's a shocking story. Look what happened. The end of the story is even more shocking. Look what happened. Chavav. Right, she fell on the doorstep and they didn't even open the door to let her in. She was lying at the doorstep and the door was firmly shut. She might have survived. They might have been able to revive her. But obviously, they weren't listening. They'd gone to sleep. Can you imagine? He's let the Pilegesh go. She's being raped and attacked by these men. He's wild men the whole night. And this guy, these two guys went in the house. They wished each other good night. And they went to sleep. It's so shocking. And look what happened here. Chav Zayin. Yokom Adonai Babok. Right, he's ready to go. What does he find? Right, and she's hands are on the grabbing hold of the door, and she's trying to get in, and she has died. It's a terrible tragedy. She's not answering. And he put her on the donkey, but of course by this time we already understand that she's not alive. So he got home. What did he do? This is so shocking. You never read this, I'm sorry. Said, I hope you haven't had lunch in the last few minutes. Go on. He took a knife, big knife, and he held onto this corpse. What did he do to her? That's Samea. He started, as it were, doing dissection. Okay, for those who have med students, you'll have a good time with this. Everybody else, this is gruesome. Okay, and he cut her up essentially into 12 parts. Look what he did. And he sent part of her to every tribe in Israel. Obviously, what was he trying to say to the tribes of Israel?
You can't make a big statement so that everyone can see like.
Right. What? Where are they holding? Are they holding as a unity? Or are they holding as 12 pieces of a corpse? 12 pieces, right? Like a corpse which is separated into 12 pieces. The body of Israel is always works when it's unified. Here, the message was, we, Am Yisrael, are so divided, but like a corpse which has been divided into 12 parts. This was a scandal beyond belief. People started, you know, these parts arrived, presumably to the leaders of the different tribes, and everybody began to get extremely angry, as you can imagine. Look what happened. Read on. Vaya. Utsu v'daber. In other words, we've got to get together and we've got to speak. What happened was the tribe of Binyamin was in fact blamed by the whole of the Jewish people for this terrible, terrible event. Am Yisrael start getting together, but of course not in a, how should we say, a positive way. They're getting together as a result of this tragedy. And you see, again, they make a decision. And in chapter 20, the decision is to go to war. And what happens, I'm just going to summarize chapter 20 very quickly. They have three battles. If you look at chapter 20, verse 1, Vayetzuko b'nei Yisrael tigele idakish echad midalat b'esheva v'eretz gilad al Hashem ha-mitzvah. They go, all of the tribes except Binyamin, who are blamed for this particular event, all the other tribes go to a place called Mitzpah, vayidyatzvu b'inot kol ha'am, kol shivtei Yisrael, and they stand there and they make a decision. And the decision is one of the most shocking, horrendous decisions. What happened? You can guess. If you haven't read it, please tell me. Guess what happened. They decided to, Binyamin on one side, the other tribes on the other side. What did the tribes decide to do? What are they going to do with Binyamin? They're going to embrace them. They're going to fight them. They're going to punish them. The other tribes got together and they decided to punish Binyamin. Shocking. Civil war. Yeah.
I don't exactly understand why they decided to do that.
Yeah, it's in fact, the question is a very great question. We're going to deal with it. Your question is a good question because the whole legitimacy of doing it is not absolutely correct. The reason is because blaming Binyamin is easy, but you know what? Those two guys, not exactly blameless, sending out the Pelegesh, you know, the whole thing. If you think about the story, there's two sides to the story.
It seems more like they're the cause of the murder.
Right. So therefore, what we're seeing is that instead of looking inward into trying to understand between us what is going on in our interpersonal relationships, you know what they're looking for? A quick fix. What's the quick fix? Punish the guilty ones, the one we think are guilty. And you know what's going to happen? We'll win, they'll lose, and that'll be the end of the story. And what is shocking is that there are three battles. The first two battles, who wins? Do the 11 tribes win or Binyamin?
Binyamin
win. And that's what's so shocking. Because you say to me, how can Binyamin win those two battles?
It was a miracle.
How? But it's not, if you want to say it like that, but it's more than that. The reason is because the attack was illegitimate. The attack was not made on the basis of investigation of really where the problem is. The attack was what we would call knee-jerk reaction. It was saying, we've got to punish them, so let's go and fight the whole lot. And you know what? This attack was illegitimate twice. And the question, which another question we're going to deal with, Mr. Shem, next time, my voice is better, is clearly going to be, they asked the Urim V'Tumim. They seem to ask Hashem what to do, and Hashem says, go and attack. So Hashem is kind of setting them up for the defeat. And that's a question in itself. How is that possible? But we'll see. We will understand that in due course. The third battle is the crucial one where all of a sudden Binyamin realized that there's something here where maybe they start getting, a conscience or whatever. If you just look, I'll show you where it is. Chapter 20. Just one second, where is it? Hang on. There's thousands of people involved in this incredible, incredible story. Thousands. Pasuk Lamed Vav, chapter 20, Chaf, Pasuk Lamed Vav, page 168 in the Red Book. Ayeru b'nei Binyamin ki nigafu, the second time Binyamin were beaten. Vaynu ish Yisrael makom le Binyamin ki batru el orev, shasom el givav, orev, echishu, vayushte el givav, imshok orev, vayachet kol ha'ir, vicharev. So at this point, Binyamin were really in a difficult situation. Finally, when they were beaten, v'moed haya le'ish Yisrael imarev cherev la'alotam masat ha'asham in'ayim, and there was smoke coming up from the city of Binyamin, and the Benjaminites were beaten. The numbers that we're talking about, I think it says 42,000 of Binyamin were killed. This is Jew against Jew. It's the scariest story probably in the Bible. One of the scariest. And you'll see by the end of this chapter, chapter 20, Pasuk Mem Vav, verse 46. Binyamin lost 25,000 ish. Sholev Cherev Yamaru on that day. Et Kol Eilan Shichayim men of soldiers. Veifnu Vianusa Midbara Selarimon Sheish Meodish. And there's an interesting Midrashic twist. 600 Benjaminites survived out of the whole tribe. And the question is, where did they go? It says that they ran away, they ran into the desert. out of this 600, there is a Rashi which is brought here, which suggests that 500 of them got on a boat. And they actually left Eretz Israel. And of course, if you're on a boat leaving Israel, there's only one direction to go, across the Mediterranean, and they ended up in Italy. And those who've been to Italy will know that the Italian Jewish community is one of the oldest Jewish communities in the world. According to this tradition, it goes right back to the biblical days of the tribe of Binyamin. The people who started the Italian Jewish community, way before the Roman Empire, way before all of that, was in fact this remnant from the tribe of Binyamin. You've only got a few hundred, maybe, Binyamin left. And of course, the problem now is, Binyamin is on the verge of extinction. Who are they going to marry? Who are they going to, you know, how are they going to reproduce the tribe? So that's chapter 21. And chapter 21, again, we're just going to read this through very quickly. If I can go back to Osnat, if you can read Perik Kafalo. Yes,
very quickly. Were the women killed also? Or was just...
Yeah, everybody was killed now. It's kind of shocking.
Was that normal?
Yeah, this was absolutely, because it was decided the whole tribe was responsible, man, woman, and child, collective responsibility. So that they were treated like almost like an Irani Dachat. Irani Dachat is a city where the whole city does idolatry, all wiped out, man, woman, and child. Scary. Now they've got a problem. The remnants, who are they going to marry? Look at chapter 21. There's an interesting twist at the end there. The Ish Israel. Right, we're not going to give our daughters to Binyamin. Who's going to marry Binyamin? Nobody's left. And they refuse to intermarry with the other tribes. Said, we don't want you guys. So they came to Bethel. Right, and the people came after all that happened, and they started crying. Because this was a terrible tragedy. It was almost at the point, Binyamin was at the point of extinction. So we would never ever be in a situation, potentially, of 12 tribes ever again. This was, it was dire, it was catastrophic. Look what happened. Gimel. Ayomer. Why did it happen? Lipaked Ayom Israel. We're losing a whole tribe. Vayim Acharad. They did the Cheshbon HaNefesh. Finally, the whole of Am Yisrael got together and started looking into their souls, into their hearts. Why is this really taking place? Listen to this. They had to get closer to Hashem. They realized they'd moved away from God. Now is the time to start building bridges back to God. They finally got the message. Look what they did. Vayomru b'nei Yisrael, hey. Not your mother. Anyone who didn't come to this gathering, everybody had been called together, they were in danger of being killed. Because the rule was, if you didn't turn up, they said, you'd be put to death. Look what happened. Vayinachmu b'nei Yisrael. They were sorry for Binyamin. They reconsidered, what are we going to do? If we don't do something soon, Binyamin is going to die out. Nobody left. They're not marrying into our tribes. So Vayomer, they said, right, the whole tribe is going to be destroyed. Mana selahem. Right, we've said we're not going to marry our daughters to them. So who are they going to marry? Hechet Vayomer. So what they found is that there's a whole group in Yavesh Gilad, which was actually outside Eretz Israel, the two and a half tribes that stayed outside Israel, a whole group did not come to this gathering. And they were considered to be guilty for this. And in fact, what happened was that as a result, they were punished, the men, but not the women. And these women, they found 400 women there who were not married, and they were now in a situation where there was no men to marry, because the men that should have gone to the gathering didn't go, and they were punished by everybody else. They were killed. So these 400 women became, I suppose you would say, you know, sort of the first people to choose to marry the tribe of Binyamin. This is where the first group of women came from, to marry into Binyamin. And that's what it says, it continues. I just want to get to the end of the chapter. So have a look at this, because there's a very interesting thing right at the end. And we're looking at Pasuk, just a second. Yeah, Pasuk Yud Chet. Sorry, Pasuk Tet Zayin, excuse me. By Yomer Ziknei Oida. After they married these 400, they still needed to find more women to marry Binyamin. Wasn't enough. A Yomer Ziknei Oida. Right, they're still missing their own women. What are we going to do? A Yomer, so they said. Got to be an inheritance to them. Those they've got to be. They've got to survive. We can't lose this tribe. So what are we going to do? Ma'anachnu. Right, we can't still supply from our tribes. Okay, so you can't do it. It's a curse. So what did they decide? You tell Vayomru. Yomim. This is the festival of Tu Ba'av, which we know is one of the happy days to get married. It's a festival of wedding, Shiduchim. So they said there's a festival in Shiloh, the original Tu Ba'av, every year. Asher bit mitzafon al Betel, the north of Betel. Shechem, it's on the road to Shechem. In Negev, Lilavonat, from Lavona, wherever that is. And what did they do? Vayitzavu et b'nei Binyamin le'mor. Go and hide in the orchards, in the kramim, in the vineyards, and they told them what to do. Re'itel. Right, and they'll come out to dance. The girls used to wear white dresses. A lot of you must know about this. And they had this special celebration once a year. So the men were sort of able to see them. And what does it say? V'yitzatem? Take your wives from the Benot Shiloh. If you like the look of the girl, then you sort of approach her and say who you are, and then you'll see if you're compatible. And then v'alachtem, you will go Eretz Binyamin. So this was another way to try and get them to marry. And look what happened. V'haya. And you'll say the brothers will come and argue, how can you marry Binyamin? There was a curse on anyone who gave their daughters. But Yavar Marna will say, Aleihem, Chanunu Otam, be kind, Chesed, do a real Chesed to this tribe. You wipe them out, almost man, woman, and child, now try and keep them alive. And of course, this was going to make an impression. Kilo. If you don't do this now, you'll be guilty. Zalu, right? And they even found these women. It's almost as if they stole these women because they weren't supposed to marry them. On the other hand, this was the only thing they could do. And they went. And they managed to settle, so the tribe of Benjamin was saved. And finally, they still went back to their tribes, to their inheritance. And here comes the refrain, Bayamim Rahim. Yes, and that's the end of the sefer. In this story is contained in a very, very sharp focus, the basic disease of the whole period of the judges. That when Chesed was done, it was done in a very, very, let's use the word, almost perverse way. It wasn't done with a sense of generosity. It was done what the Gemara calls sarata ayin, with a very small eye, ayin hara. It was done in such a way that it was so negative, even the old man taking the friend into the house, but by allowing the Pelegish, throwing her out to the crowd in order that they should have their way with her, is unbelievable. What he does to the corpse is again unbelievable. What happened, even though he's making a point, halachically, are you allowed to do that to a corpse? No, of course not. So this whole story from the beginning, even the way they find their wives, Gazalu says that they had to steal them away from Bnei Yisrael. Everything here is very, very difficult. And what this story is really saying is that at this point in time, Am Yisrael may have settled the land physically, may have settled the land in a geographical sense, but they have a long way to go to settle the land spiritually. And of course, one of the beautiful things that happened in the next Sefer that we would go into straight away, Sefer Shmuel, is that we learn about Shmuel and Avi, and we learn about Elkanah, they're all Leviim, and they're all coming along to do the right thing. And they do the right thing. And who's going to be the first king of Israel? Shaul. What tribe is Shaul from? Binyamin. Phenomenal. By the time you go one generation down the line, Binyamin is back to the point. This is one of the reasons why Shaul is chosen. It goes to the point where he can become the king of Israel. That in itself is saying, Am Yisrael have begun, if not entered into seriously, the process of what we call in Hebrew, Cheshbon HaNefesh. What we have to think about, and Mitzvah Hashem will do that on Thursday, is the whole story, how could we ever have descended into a situation when it is, let's put it this way, Sodom, you can always blame and say, well, they weren't Jewish. They were idol worshippers, pagans. This is Jews. Am Yisrael behaving in a way which is beyond belief. For those that have the red book, at the back of the red book, on page 367, there is an incredible, please listen, there's an incredible piece in the Ramban. Those of you who can get your hands on a Ramban, an English translation or whatever, the Ramban of Sodom, chapter 19 of Bereshit, talks about the story of Pelegesh Begiva. And he makes some phenomenal comments. Whether you'll agree with the Ramban, I'm not sure. Whether you like what he says, he tries to make excuses a bit for what's going on here. We'll see Mitzvah Hashem on Thursday. The bottom line of it is that this is, without doubt, one of the most incredible, shocking wake-up calls, I think, in the whole of the Bible. And it's saying to the Jewish people, you as a nation function when not only are you unified, but you start caring for each other. If you just care for your own friends, if you don't care for society, you don't care for people around you, we're in trouble. And this is a classic, an unbelievable story. I'm going to say a bit more about it in Mitzvah Hashem on Thursday. If you've never heard this before, I apologize. It's a pretty shocking story. But at the same time, I'm glad my voice survived. Everybody have a good day. Thank you.